Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to This Week at FX PhD. I'm John Montgomery, joined as always by Mike. How's it going, my friend? Happy New Year.
Yes, and one of our all-time favorite shows. We do four of these a year, the shows where we get to run through the new courses at FX PhD, and of course, we really look forward to these. End of last year got uber crazy. Somebody complained we hadn't been doing enough of our This Week in FX PhDs, but I was, in fairness, in China, so it wasn't John's fault. And then John joined me, and then I was in New Zealand, and John didn't join me. So it was all just crazy times. But we're here now and very keen to be tackling the new year, 2015, our 39th term, I believe, John.
Yes, that is crazy numbers. So, yes, very happy to be starting out the new term. Apologize if I'm a bit scratchy. Maybe Mike will do a bit more talking than normal. If that's possible.
True.
But I'm just, but I am covering, recovering from the flu, but I'm not letting the excitement for the new term. The flu is not standing in the way of that. So where should we start, my friend? We've got a cool lineup of courses, including one that we just announced.
That's what I was going to say, that we should definitely start with the last in, first out, because that's always a good way to manage a list. And so let's do that. Creating Dynamic Destruction FX in Houdini, Maya, and Nuke. So the primary software for this is, of course, going to be Houdini, because you'd expect that with something to do with destruction. But as the name implies, John, this is going to be covering, of course, Maya and Nuke stuff, sort of rigid body debris, particle stuff, fluid stuff. And it's all inspired by a shot from Transformers 3, the sort of tiled building sequence. And Liam's doing this. We're very happy to have Liam Whitehouse back. He's a terrific prof. And I guess you and I were both super enthusiastic to get this, even though it came slightly late into our mix of stuff.
Yeah, it really is. It was one that came up in the last several weeks. Liam had an opportunity, sent us something to pitch us. And we're like, well, actually, instead of if by next year, teach the course, how about starting January 1st? And he was really nice enough to actually get things together with the course, because it actually does take some time to kind of plot out ideas. Thankfully, Liam has taught for us as well as at other places as well. So he has experience teaching, so it comes a bit more naturally to him. But yeah, worked it together. And I think, again, the idea about using these multiple products is that's actually sensibly the way that it happens in production. There are lots of aspects of software that's better in one than the other, and that's kind of the focus of this course. Liam actually worked in a pipeline utilizing all three of these tools, and that's why he's going to kind of teach it that way. For those of you who aren't familiar with this, just do a search on Google for Transformers Tilting Building. You probably know what that scene refers to. If you haven't seen the clip, but I think that's a good way of getting an idea of what clip is inspiring Liam's content.
I said tile building because I was thinking of all the windows and stuff, and I meant tilting, but you're absolutely right. And so Liam actually was a TD, technical director at ILM, where he was working on Transformers 3. So this isn't just somebody commenting, oh, that stuff that ILM did, that was interesting. I wonder how I could do that with my stuff. Now, ILM's pipeline is ILM's pipeline. We respect ILM enormously. They use FISBAM, which has got stuff to do with research done out of Stanford. We've covered that before in Background Fundamentals. They have gas simulations with Plume and Xeno, which is both the particle simulations and the stuff that feeds into their compositing pipeline. That is ILM's pipeline with proprietary software that is terrific, and we're not teaching that. What we're doing is we're saying with the software that is available for people doing sensible professional work, which is, of course, Houdini, Maya, and Nuke, could you do something similar? And it's not to say that, it's anything, a comment on the software. It's literally just a comment on availability of access to the software. It's not much point us teaching you Plume if you can only use it inside ILM. So we're not saying for a second that we're teaching you ILM software. We're simply saying that we admire the work that has been done in this kind of a pipeline. There's a lot to be learned by doing this. And John, even outside ILM for a second, I was just in New Zealand talking about The Hobbit, and we were discussing the whole idea of the opening sequence, Smog, which is in this week's FX Guide TV. And this idea of a simulation with the wings, which causes air current flows, which changes the particle simulations, which also affects the currents of air that are feeding the fire sim, which of course causes the rigid body destruction that causes stuff to fall into the water, which is the fluid sims. This is the nature of hardcore visual effects these days, that it's a that it is a pipeline and a series of things affecting other things. So I couldn't be prouder that we managed to have Liam joining us back again this term to do this great course. Creating Dynamic Destruction Effects in Houdini, Meyer and Nuke. It's starting right now. And of course, as with all of the courses, you can get a rundown on that either from the FX PhD overview video, where we sort of have like a couple of minutes per new thing in the courses, or on the new listing page that John has put together. So if you go to FX PhD and look at our courses, which is, of course, in the top bar of the menus, you'll see all the courses on available, and you can click on any one of them to get a rundown. And I just want to flag the web stuff because it's new this term. John and the team have done a great job with it, but also because if you are experienced with FX PhD and you don't want to look at all the courses, don't forget to use those filter buttons up the top that allow you to say search on just new courses, and that'll only give you the new courses this term. Or for example, you could similarly search on just editing, grading, audio type courses, or pipeline or production. So the filters buttons are really good. And you kind of need filters mainly because we're proud to say PhD has, what, over 100 courses on offer this term?
I think so. Boy, far over 100, I believe. So, and many of them, I think that's another important factor. I know those of you who've been members for several terms know this, but simply because a course isn't being run as a standard course doesn't mean it's not worthwhile. We have a ton of great courses. They're part of the vault. They just simply don't come with a prof monitoring the forums because the prof's probably not available to monitor their forums. But again, check out the entire course listing page. And Mike's right, the filters page is a great way to kind of target the area in which you're most interested. And as mentioned to Mike, by the end of this week, and maybe even by the time you guys are listening to this podcast, we'll also have a filter button for various software applications as well, so that you could say, just show me the new courses, and you get a listing for that as well.
Yeah. I mean, some of the stuff doesn't really date. Obviously, I did a miniatures course ages ago in Adelaide. I loved it to death, but a lot of the applicable aspects of doing soft frame miniatures is completely, sort of valid today. Other courses, we fully acknowledge that, maybe a different version of the software has come out, as can be the case, especially with things like Nuke and stuff. And so we tried to make it clear as to what's what. But as a general rule of thumb, as I say, the new courses are the easiest thing to filter on. And then just see whether the course is a standard course that's being taught with a professor rolling out each week, or whether it's one of the Vault courses that you can have for immediate download. We don't put anything there that we don't think has educational value. So we hope that nothing will be stuff that, you know, you can't get value from. But depending on what your needs are, you may want to know just the current version, because that's what you're trying to learn to get an update. Or you may be after, learning a whole new area, which is, of course, a lot less about an individual area of software and more about the procedure or the approach to solving that. But John, we've got great follow-up courses this term that are new courses that are building on stuff we had last. And I'm going to flag right out of the gate the intermediate 3D equalizer course, because we were very glad to have an introduction to 3D equalizer. And it was really important that I think we did that, because equalizer is such an important piece of software. And Philip's teaching that as he did the introductory course. But the thing about that was that a lot of people did say, well, I'd love to get deeper into 3D equalizer. And we thought, well, we have to run the original, introduction so that you can understand what's what. But we're really glad that this term that Philip can come back with our 3DE 201 course, which is using version 4 of the software. And 3D Equalizer is just one of the cornerstones of any tracking facilities operation. Maybe, you use some other software for some of the easier stuff, but when it gets into the hardball territory, this is the kind of stuff that really matters. And Philip's actually taught internationally as well as with us. He's worked at places like the Mill, so we're really glad to have him back. It's a good solid 10-week course that's going to take you right up to really complicated stuff to do with, as you know from tracking, zooms and stuff in shot really throw a lot of stuff. And his practical experience speaks volumes for what we're doing. So I know that one's going to be a popular course, especially for those smaller outfits that do their own tracking.
Yeah, exactly. And I really like his approach of showing a bunch of different types of tracks, because the tracking constructions are so markedly different between the various types of shots. You know, the nodal pan, well, there's no parallax between as you're moving, so you don't see any difference in depth. How do you deal with that? From all the way from the zoom, is class number 10 with the zoom with dynamic focal lengths. That's obviously a different challenge. So it's a really a great second step. And I really appreciate his enthusiasm about FX PhD. Last term was the first time that he taught at FX PhD, and really enjoyed the experience, really enjoyed interacting with the members. And he actually came to us saying, hey, can I teach another course? And we're really happy to have him back based upon the response the members had to his initial 101 course. And if you're taking, if you're interested in 3D Equalizer in general, we do have it on the VPN. And we also are also running the introductory course, 3DE 101, that was new last term. We're running that again this term as well. So you can take those two as a tag team course in our two-course membership.
So a long time ago in a land far, far away, like Sydney, I wandered in one night to a place called I'm going to say it's NYPD 3D. That was the original name of the company. And these were the guys that were just operating at a really small office in Crow's Nest that went on to become Fusion, that went on to become Ion. And of course, that company got purchased and moved into the Blackmagic design stable. So Ion Software has had some changes because of that. I think there's probably more still to come, but version 7 of the software is out. It's robust, and there's a free version of it. And because the software now exists inside Blackmagic Design, and it's a lot more accessible to a lot more people, we naturally had quite a lot of people sending us emails when that news came out saying, oh my God, I'd really like you guys to run a Fusion production workshop. And we have Daniel Smith doing exactly that this term. So this is production workshop. It's FUS 203, so it's a 200 level course. So it's not like a base introduction to Fusion. But for those of you that are wondering, my recommendation is if you understand compositing, you probably find it pretty easy to move over. If you've never done any compositing before, that's where a 100 level course is a lot more relevant to you. But because Fusion is going to be something that people are looking at from the compositing community, we decided to kick that with a 200 level course. And I just want to flag one other thing, John. In this course syllabus, if you go through it, you'll notice that class 10 has a TBD, like a to be determined. We're doing that in a number of the courses. The last class, we're keeping them kind of open. I'm certainly doing that in a course we're going to talk about in a second, which is a DOP course. And one of the reasons for that is we've found, because these courses are interacting with members during the term and we're monitoring what people are asking questions about and doing stuff, for some of us, we have obviously enough material to cover the 10 classes, but we want to keep space in the curriculum to be able to tackle that thing that seems to have drawn a lot of attention or interest from people in the forums. So one of the huge advantages of PhD is that you can, you know, talk to Daniel or me or whoever in the forums and answer questions, but also in the first run of these new courses, you have an opportunity quite often to influence, say, that 10th class, where I'm sure Daniel's the same as us. We have something up our sleeve that we could do. For example, in DOP last term, we had a DOP course, and Ben Allen and I got a lot of really interesting questions about light meters, because we discussed that a lot in the class and hadn't really gotten into the mechanics of how we go about using them or what we use. And it was something I didn't expect. But we used that to in our last class 10, so we did some stuff that we wanted to cover, but then did a lot more on the light meter process of metering up and working out your contrast ratios and how we work, and quite frankly, what light meters Ben always has on his hip. And I would never have done that if I'd just been formulating the course from scratch. So you'll see that in the Fusion workshop, and as I say, you'll see it in a couple of others. And that's the reason that 10th class is sometimes kept free, in that we want to be able to respond to you. I kind of feel like that's one of the big advantages of PhD, that we can be that flexible and respond to you. But I'm sure you'd agree, John.
Yeah, it is. And this is a great example in this case, is that we had this specific discussion before we started this course. Do we want to cover stuff that's in the Fusion 7 Studio, or the differences being the paid version? And one of those big factors between the various versions, in addition to network rendering, which is a big issue in the paid version, is actually the optical flow tools. That's one standpoint, but the stereoscopic 3D tool set. And initially we had that class number 10 down as stereoscopic 3D tool set. But what we want to do, just exactly to Mike's point, is kind kind of sample from you guys who are out there and taking the course. Is that something that's of interest to you? Because I know there are many of you who actually aren't using the stereoscopic tools. There seems to be a bit of a decline in the use of it in certain situations, especially those recent commercials. But that's one reason we kind of wanted to take the pulse, so to speak, of the people taking the course to find out whether that's a value. And if not, we'll slot something else in by popular request.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Like for those people that are doing stereo, and there obviously is still a lot of stereo stuff going out, but I've got to say the lack of... doesn't seem to be the focus of innovation, but hey, is that us talking, or is that
right.
You know, what you guys want? And that's exactly why we started PhD the way that we did. When the very first day, like, you know, years ago, when we were doing this, we wanted to be able to work with you and not have a one-way conversation where we're just telling you stuff. So even apart from this idea of a 10th class, obviously, if there are things that you're not understanding during the course, stuff can be sat in. And I do background fundamentals, and I often get questions throughout the terms on bits of software, especially if, like, a trade show is coming up or something's launching. Can you go check this out? And we've done that countless times. And I've been really, I've really welcomed the suggestions, because if you guys want to know about it, we want to teach it. So there you go. What's next on the agenda, John?
Well, I want to flag two very cool courses that I'm happy that we have as a pair this term, which is two new Cinema 4D courses, one of which was a specific response to several members' requests. But I'm going to start just in general with Tim Clapham's Cinema 4D 217 course. That's all I need to say, really, about that course. we're really happy to have Tim back. Tim teaches several courses for us a year here at FXPHD, and they're always great. The thing that I like about Tim's courses is they're very much project-based courses, classes, brought from work that he has actually done, or inspired by work that he's done, utilizing techniques that he's formed on those jobs. And I think they're really a great way of learning, especially the way that Tim teaches that. So I think it's four mini projects over the duration of the term. One project is going to take up four different classes. But using a wide variety of Cinema 4D techniques, as well as interaction in After Effects, to really get the most out of your projects. And I think, again, the thing that we love about Tim courses, the members love about Tim courses, they're very much production-based, and his style of teaching is really fantastic. Really clean, clear, concise, really fantastic. So we're happy to have him back for the term. The second course is one that I'm speaking of came direct from members responsive, and that's the idea of a materials course for Cinema 4D. Not a materials course where you go and buy some plugins or buy other things, but how do you actually build cool materials and procedural textures from scratch, utilizing blending modes, filtering, things like that. And that's why it's really great that we have someone like Tony Capolillo joining us, because he's got a lot of experience in the industry, but largely his part as an artist and photographer and illustrator. And he made the move years ago to actually doing effects and 3D for things like movie posters. And in that process, he's actually effectively taught himself through photography and procedural texturing how to build materials from scratch, and that's what he's going to share as part of this course. It's really different from anything that we've done in Cinema 4D before in the past, but we got a tremendous number of requests from you guys to cover material building within Cinema 4D, and actually we're delivering on that. So I think it's going to be a great course.
Yeah, Tony's based in LA, and John mentioned that work that he'd done with digital photo compositing and using stuff there. But I mean, he has a ton of experience, but the client list is incredibly impressive. Disney, Fox, DreamWorks, Universal, like everything that you would hope. And not just the studios. He's done stuff for the TV stations like HBO and Netflix and stuff. So I mean, experience is what matters. And sometimes people say, why don't you just tell us what you're going to do in the next term's courses? And it's like, well, actually, it takes a bit of time for us to lock people in, because, you know, quite frankly, these people are, like Tony, very experienced production type people. And so, you know, people's schedules are what they are. But yeah, those two Cinema 4D courses, quite different perspectives, but both really, really good.
I had to laugh because I actually don't think I told you about this one. until middle of, actually at the beginning of the October term when we started planning for that. But I've actually been, we've been holding this one out for three terms now because he's been on production and busy, and he's been wanting to do it. So we're really happy to have him back.
Well,
or join us for the first time, I should say.
I mentioned earlier the DOP stuff. So before I forget to get back to that, let me flag it because I think it needs a little bit of explaining, and I'm very keen about this. It's a new course with Ben Allen, who is a very well-known cinematographer. He's done a lot of work with us before, but obviously just as a professional DOP, he's done a huge amount of work. What we did last term with Ben is we were looking at using natural lighting, and one of the things that came up in the process of doing that is that we started having these chats between setups and stuff about what it is that makes a short film suck and what is it that makes a short film good. And we were at that time buying new cameras and getting new tech, and I was also talking to other people at the same time, people like Jason Wingrove and stuff. And one of the things that sort of dawned on us is that the thing that is really defining good short films and good dramatic projects at the moment, otherwise not like interviews, not, you know, stuff that you would call sort of documentary, is not the gear, not that you've got the latest cool thing, but that you can actually make things watchable and engaging and interesting. And we were thinking about that. And so then I raised the question with Ben. I said, what do you think the three worst sins are? You know, we're just literally having a coffee. And he was like, he surprised me actually. He said, I think blocking and not having enough stuff for editing. And of course, I was reminded that in addition to being this DOP that's done so much work, Ben has actually developed software plugins for Final Cut and done a bunch of stuff with editors and working out workflows for major TV networks. And so he was saying that getting coverage and the sort of the framing and the blocking so as to keep the story clear were the two things that really struck out for him. And then I must admit, the one that I suggested as a third was just bad audio. And I did that partly because, as I've mentioned many times, I'm not naturally good at audio. Ryan, who is on our team and a senior member of it, is spectacularly good. That would not be me. So it isn't, you know, getting a new piece of kit. It's not getting an expensive camera. It's like when I watch people doing films, if the audio is not right and not appropriate, it's terrible. And this came up in a number of areas. Anyway, at this point, Ben pointed out that a very good friend of his is now involved heavily with Rode, and we should get Rode microphones involved because they've got some new kit coming out and some new techniques.
I love their kit.
And they are one of the most innovative audio companies. As you probably know from background classes I've done, I use their products on like the iPhone. They've got these tremendous tools that have just turned my phone into kind of a professional backup for our other gear. But they just make great gear anyway. We've used them at trade shows, on shoots, ton of other stuff. So we thought, all right, let's cover those three areas. Let's cover blocking and getting really good framing and stuff that works, coverage and how to do stuff, and then of course sound. So those are the three areas we're covering. Doesn't require you to spend money. You should be able to cover all of this without, I mean, okay, maybe with sound you might need to revise your kit a little, but even sound gear isn't that expensive these days. And I think the other thing about this that I wanted to flag is that the nature of doing our projects with Ben, I find tremendously educational, because what I try and do is I come up with daft and whacked out ideas of things that we should shoot that causes Ben to have to work with one hand tied behind his back. It's partly a joke, but it's partly because that's what happens in the real world. You know, you don't walk into a studio and have everything that you want. You do get presented with problems. And if you are sort of serious about this, the thing that is really interesting is that creative problem solving. And so I must say Ben loves coming up with solutions to these things. But the first class, for example, I said, okay, well, it's easy enough to get coverage when you've got a two-shot because you can just cut between them. So I want you to do in coverage and do stuff on a single person, giving one narrative example where you can't cut to another person because there's only one person. And oh, by the way, they're not going to deliver the same material exactly each time. So you can't just film the wide and cut in for the close-ups because it won't necessarily match. And that person is going to be experienced but not in film. And so we have just terrific material in that first class has been covers exactly that problem. How to film something looking dramatic, interesting in a cinematic style. But unlike last term, he can use any lights he wants, any tech he wants, but we're not focusing on spending money. We're focusing on doing stuff. And Alicia Talbot is that first presenter. She's actually, John, she's had supporting actress roles in feature films and stuff, but she went into directing, and she does hardcore theatre, as you'll hear in Class One. Very hardcore theatre. And she's hoping to come back with some actors from around the world who are keen to work with her to workshop some stuff up later in the term. So this could actually turn into one of our strongest working with actors type of DOP classes that we've had as well. So that's another bonus to that one.
It's going to be a lot of fun, and Ben's always great. I love his courses and your courses because you're...
I'm the straight guy.
Intimately,
I'm the straight guy. Okay, so that... That's,
but you're asking, you're making him do the things, asking questions I'm curious about too, though. I mean, I think that's what, frankly, in all seriousness, that is what you bring to it, which I think is really great. So I think, very much looking forward to this kind of approach. And so you're right, it's a bit different from what we've done in the past. So
yeah, I was at Animal Logic yesterday filming, and I was immediately sort of quoting Ben to myself in my head as I lit this stuff. And Ben knows lots of great DOPs, and so he'll come up with these pearls, and I'm like, oh, we should do that. So it's a lot of fun. He's not the only DOP that we work with. Of course, we work with Tom Gleason and a bunch of others, but that experience of just years of doing it and pulling it out and delivering is invaluable. And as much as we shoot, John, we tend to shoot inside a constrained area of stuff, he really benefits from years and years of solving complex problems in the field. Hey, the other one I wanted to go on to next, if we could, is Christos shading in RenderMan, RIS. I had RSI back in the 80s or sometime like that, so it just comes off the tongue too easily. Okay, so it's a new RenderMan course. It's running with the new, effectively, version 19. They don't tend to push the version number so hard in RenderMan anymore, but this is very much branching off our introduction to that technology, which was in the RND 102 course. So this is a 200 level course versus the 100 level course, and the shading system, the way that it works in the new RenderMan, is really, really interesting. We've had a lot of time with the Pixar team, but Christos is absolutely the go-to guy for doing this kind of stuff, apart from his own experience in a ton of feature films, from Superman to Spider-Man to whatever. He works closely internationally, producing shaders with his own company, and this is kind of his ground zero. Not only is that his ground zero, but he's recognized very much by Pixar as being a tremendous contributor in this area. So we're very happy to have him doing our new RenderMan course. And John, as much as I like rendering and stuff and consider myself to be kind of fairly well read in the area, man, am I going to be watching this sucker.
Yeah, he's really good. We're very happy to have him back. His course last term was really great because it was going on, well, it's great for us because it's going on during the beta process, but it was actually very difficult for him. And what's really great about him, he really dives in fully into these courses to make them the most that they are, because obviously as you're using beta software, things change during beta, actually changes in many ways, sometimes the way things are done in the software. And he was really amazing at what he did for that course throughout the term, and actually help provide feedback as part of the development process as well. And this course is actually, very much a natural building step from that, which we are, if you missed it, as Mike said, that course is also running this term, the initial.
Yeah, there are a slight number of things that literally changed in the beta so the 100 level course is completely valid, don't get me wrong, but it's great to be immediately hitting this 200 level course because some of the aspects were tweaked during the render the beta process, which actually went on a little longer than everybody expected. We love working with Pixar, and we've got a terrific working relationship with them. So giving you early access was, I think, exactly the right thing to do, especially given the new pricing and availability of RenderMan. But that being said, it's, I think, important to now come through with this 200 level course on shading. And that's going to cover a ton of stuff, including the OSL shaders, which I've got a personal interest in because RenderMan now supports OSL. Writing for that and getting cross-platform compatibility is a really important aspect. So keep an eye out for that course. If you're into rendering, we take a lot of pride in producing good rendering courses here and letting people polish stuff. And I guess that's a reasonable segue into also that we have a lot of software that's available on a VPN, like $40,000 worth or something. And the idea of the VPN software is we know that you want software to train on, and we want you to have software that isn't just some kind of watermarked or limited version. Now, there are oftentimes good student versions, or it's quite possible that there are versions of software that are fairly cut down that you can get access to. Wherever possible, we try and provide a full version of the software that you can use for doing your own showreel and developing work, not for obviously commercial work. But that licensing arrangement, if you don't know, works just like if you're in a facility, your computer wouldn't have an individual license on it. It would just look up on the server and see if there's a valid license and then go for it. Works the same way, but across the net. So it looks at, in this case, John's computer or a computer in John's facility and says, hey, we got a valid license for this. It says yes, and then you can run the software. And in that respect, you're running the software properly. It's not like it is running remotely, just checking the license. And we'll keep that running for longer than the term, so that if you're working on a project that you're finishing for your reel, it runs past the sort of calendar end of term. So, for example, the VPN licenses for last term are still valid right now for the October term. We do that so you can complete work and with the cooperation of the companies that we work with. And John, you should probably flag as your charge of it the some of the VPN software that is available that's relevant to the new courses.
It certainly is. It's a great list that we have available to us supporting the courses from the new version, obviously, of Nuke 9 that was introduced, both X and Studio, the late last year. We've got Golem Crowd still. We've got Modo, Katana, Houdini. Mike mentioned RenderMan. We have both Pro Server 19 as well as Studio 19 for Maya. Mari, V-Ray, of course, we mentioned earlier, 3D Equalizer for you guys to check out as well as some of the tools from the Foundry like Ocula and Rolling Shutter. In addition to one edition that's actually not up on our site yet because we actually don't have it installed, but will next week, and that's RealFlow 2014. And so we have a new course on that this term. We've had RealFlow courses in the past, but there were some major reworks that actually happened in 2014 that was introduced in the middle of this year. This is one that we've also been working on. We were actually hoping to have something in July and October, but finally able to make it happen in the January term a bit later. But significant changes in the UI in RealFlow. They had introduced this idea of UI shelves. They allow you to actually organize your tools in the interface with like things like so you can score scripts in them, things like that. They introduced a new fluid solver in 2013 with incredible performance on it, but actually did not have viscosity controls, which actually proves to be problematic when you're dealing with liquids. So that's something that was new. In addition, there were flip secondaries as well as part of that solver now. So that's why we're really excited to have Marcelo teaching the new course this term at FX PhD. It's a new, I was just looking, I lost the place of it, but the course number is RealFlow 204, Intermediate RealFlow. And he's going to be covering very much a project-based approach, different types of fluids. And if you take a look at the course syllabus, you can see that he's kind of broken it up very sensibly in different types of fluids and the way things work, from splashes to creating paint, blood, and honey. I mean, right there, that's a really great example of where viscosity is going to have an issue when you're creating chocolate freezing over a bar.
Yeah, definitely.
Destruction even, which is something that you can do as in RealFlow, obviously, as well. And then taking a look at things like seas with Stormy Ocean and Mesh. I think it's also important. We talked about rendering in with RenderMan, obviously. We had a great V-Ray course last term. This course is very much not focused on the actual render. I just want to make that clear because sometimes we have that perception. This course is about doing the sims, getting the sims right to render and light and shade and things like that. That's not what this course, you know, this course is not about rendering. This course is about getting those sims ready for use. Very different. Maybe we'll do a course. Maybe that's a good idea for a course next term is actually taking the sims from this course, rendering them. But again, I think it's important to be clear of that because we have had that question in the past. You know, you guys are obviously experienced users out there, but we do occasionally get that question where they say, okay, we're going to be doing splashes. We're expecting photoreal splashes. That is not what this course is about. This course is very much targeted on doing great sims, learning how to use RealFlow, and that's what we want to concentrate as part of this course.
Yeah, I mean, it's completely standard in any pipeline that you would work this way. I guess maybe for those people that are doing all the stuff themselves, they don't even think about that natural break between doing the sim and the polygonalization that involves the first step in heading into the renderer. But yeah, the stuff that is being captured here, I mean, the Veroni structures, fractures stuff is great. It's such a classic approach to doing destruction stuff that is great. And I've got to say, the honey viscosity stuff, yeah, I'm really, really glad to see that. It is a very different part of a fluid sim, and just not that relevant when you're doing sort of water and oceans, which is where most people start, or pouring wine glasses. But yeah, it's the stuff that really is probably much more relevant if you're doing product work. And if you're in advertising, it's much more likely that those are the sort of things that are going to come up for you. So we're really glad to have that. I like the Real Flow guys a lot. They do great work. So glad to have that on the roster.
Yeah, certainly, and very happy that they're willing to provide for the VPN as well, because again, that's obviously the best way to learn, as well as frankly introduce people to what the software could do in comparison to other applications.
So I'll give John's voice a break and talk to you about the Flame Masters 2 course. So this is Sam Edwards. Sam is a longtime friend of us and FX Guide and FX PhD. He did a Flame course for us, which was 208. So this is Flame 209. So it's a 200-level course. That was a terrific course, the Flame 208 course. He's a longtime Flame user, and I think that you would have probably seen the stuff that we covered on his Cosmos television series. He did like 250 shots for those. We covered those both inside FX PhD and inside FX Guide. The thing about doing this is that obviously Flame is something that's close to our heart. We've come from Flame. We met because of stuff with Discrete Logic and Autodesk, as of course our business partner Jeff Huser. That's the starting place for FX Guide. So we take our Flame courses pretty seriously here. And when I say that we're really happy to have Sam back, it comes with that kind of pedigree of we'd be pretty quick to not like somebody if we thought they weren't doing Flame justice. So the Flame Masters course is something that actually brings multiple perspectives. And do you want to discuss that, John, to the because we don't actually have at the moment for you, if you're listening to this right away, but we'll be up really soon, each of the class rundowns.
Yeah, so again, Sam is leading the course. He's kind of the headliner of this, helping organize this, but he's kind of brought in a few of his friends. But Sam is going to be covering kind of cool techniques that you can use kind of daily on the job, I would like to say. Sensible techniques for doing things like morphing and warping is a good example in action. You can actually do quite a bit right in action now with some of the things that have changed regarding UV mapping and splines and things like that. But in addition, he's got a couple great other guys involved. Scott Balcom, man, we've been wanting to get him involved in FX PhD for a long time. And one of the keys was actually being able to divide up the course because he's so busy. He's a really in-demand freelancer. And he's going to be doing four classes on particles. And if you take a look at the O-Week video, and then there's also a link to his Vimeo reel on particles he did in Flame, I think you'll be stunned at what you can accomplish utilizing Flame particles. He really knows how to get the most out of them. And what he's going to be doing is taking a scene without any snow, adding some breath as well. Actually, to me, as well as a couple other things as part of that.
So you're getting breath added to you, are you?
Yeah, I was actually filming yesterday in 70-degree weather with a down jacket on in some pine trees in the mountains yesterday afternoon.
Because that's only fair as I'm getting my face morphed.
Exactly. So, use the Flame guys as talent. But in addition to that, John Feegan is actually also going to be taking part of that. And John's been involved in a long-term film where he served as the editor, the colorist and the effects guy, and he actually developed some really cool workflow techniques, even predating the recent release of software where they actually added new features. But for sharing stuff between projects, getting up a sensible sharing process between various applications in your facility. So I think he's going to bring another interesting kind of different angle for that as part of the course. So the breakdown is going to be Sam's doing four classes, Scott's doing four classes, and John is doing too. And I think it's really great because I made this point in the O-Week video. There truly has been a resurgence in involvement in artists in the Flame community. I think some of that was kicked off by J.A. Drone starting this Facegroup Logic page. It's a private Facegroup page for Flame artists. But also these user groups. The guys in New York started one. There's one here in L.A. now. There's some in Atlanta, Dallas, Berlin, London. And I think, honestly, Mike, that's a reflection of some of the things that have changed in the software. We're actually seeing some substantial additions to creative tools within the software, some of the workflow hitches that were introduced when the anniversary edition, that was the Flame version where they totally redesigned the interface, totally mm-hmm. changed the workflow. There's been some time to actually implement things that, frankly, maybe should have been part of that original release but couldn't get done. So I think we're seeing that. There's, the community just seems much more active, Mike, than it has in the past, from my perspective. And I've actually heard as well from Autodesk, they're getting a lot more interest or inquiries about it as well. Oh, and not to mention the free training editions as well. If you don't have Flame installed, you can actually install those, and you'll be able to totally follow along with these courses, no problem. You can install Flame on a Linux machine, or you could install Flare on an OS X machine or Linux machine if you wanted to follow along with this course.
Hey, if somebody wanted to install that, like Flare, for example, how would they go about doing that? Do you want to just explain?
That's done at Autodesk.
Yep.
Do a search. I actually...
No, that's right. You didn't let me
I did search
the,
for
you
it.
Let me finish the thing.
Okay.
Right? So let's say you wanted to do something like that and you didn't know how to do it and you just had a question. That in addition to posting in the forums, you can actually fire us a question. Now, in this particular case, as John's indicated, that's been happening by Autodesk, but that's a reason why you might ask the question, right? Like, do I get that here or do I do that somewhere else? And I just wanted to flag how you go about doing that because you could just try sending us a personal email, and Lord only knows we do get a number of those, but there's a much better way to go about actually asking us if you've got like a technical question, like something that's not sort of immediately obvious. And that's to get it logged through our support stuff. And if you do the stuff through support, it gets a unique ID attached to it, and then it gets solved and it gets checked that it's solved. So that's what I was trying to lead you to, John. Sorry.
That's okay. No problem. But yes, click the help link, fill out a support request, and someone will get back to you. Ryan actually leads that. David helps out. Debbie helps out on the billing end. I help out as well. But yeah, Mike's point is a really good one. And that's actually that we do actually see what has been solved and what hasn't. What support requests have not been answered by us. You know, like which one has the last response from one of you guys. And we know to answer those and close it out ourselves. So it's really a great way of keeping track of that. There's also the forums for asking questions. That's generally best for related to your courses. Content in your courses, you would ask in the course forums. If you wanted just to ping other members, you didn't want to wait for us, say it's the weekend, it's like, hey, have you guys had a problem running the VPN? Post in the forums, maybe people will respond to that. But if you want to get specific help, honestly, the help link is really the best way to do that. Our response time is generally under 8 hours to get back to you, sometimes within several hours. And we really take pride in getting things up and working for you guys if you have any issues.
Now, John, I'm a big Game of Thrones fan. I kind of like Game of Thrones a lot. I would not say I'm manically obsessive compulsive about it, but I probably can see it from where I'm sitting. So I was kind of interested when on the radar in earlier discussions, something popped up about Game of Thrones TV series and matte paintings. And I was like, what? Now we've had three courses already on matte painting. It was a series, basically, DMP 201, 202, and 203. We now have DMP 205 with Ludo. Do you want to explain how I'm going to get my fix from this marvelous environment artist at Double Negative?
Yes, sure. So as Mike mentioned, first of all, just a bit of background that we have a great curriculum of matte courses that are developed by Ludo, walking you through the stamp process of making a matte painting. A matte painting in a feature film pipeline. In other words, he really spends his time getting that 2D matte painting, getting the imagery ready for use in compositing. And that's where that DMP curriculum comes into play. In that curriculum, working a lot of different shots, types of shots, things like that, getting feedback in the forums. So it's kind of a variety of different subjects each and every term, or challenges each and every term. For this term, we decided to concentrate, or actually he suggested concentrating on one matte painting over the duration of the term. And again, similar to the course in Houdini, this one is using Game of Thrones as an inspiration for that, to create the kind of matte painting that you might see in one of the locations of Game of Thrones. And we're going to be working on that over the course of the term, from start to finish, doing the things that you need to do to get a really high-quality matte painting executed. And that involves, obviously, a ton of Photoshop. That's the heart of the tool that Ludo uses, but also involves other things like 3D applications, things like that, in order to get that shot prepped and ready to go into compositing. So I think this one's going to be kind of cool. It's very different from the ones in the past, where it's kind of lots of different mini projects, things like snow, rain, different scenes. This one is actually working on a single project and executing it through the duration of the term. And as always, I think one of the great things about Ludo's courses, and the thing that he really strives to get you guys who are taking the course involved in, is submitting your work in the forums. It just takes a second to submit a still, post a still in the forum to get feedback. But I think it's really a great way to learn and take advantage of having someone at Ludo's level available to ask a question and get feedback. I mean, it's a fantastic opportunity for you. I think we've talked about it in the past. If you don't take advantage of that opportunity, I frankly think you're missing something about the FXPhD membership.
Yeah, I mean, Photoshop is not the hardest program in the world to use. What you're getting from this course is the benefit of developing your eye and developing what's needed to sell a shot and make something sit in properly. And that, you know, like, you could be a compositor who doesn't normally do matte paintings. This is an ideal course. It's a 200-level course, so it's not a beginner course, but it's also not a 300-level obscure or, you know, super whatever course. It's, I mean, you know, almost everybody I know can use Photoshop. So as John said, getting Leto's perspective on this kind of Game of Thrones-inspired type shot, those sorts of shots is what gives a production so much production value. You know, you don't need to have every shot as a big epic wide shot, but yeah, like an odd epic wide shot, just to kind of get us in the mood and set the pace and the context. And then, of course, you can get ahead with the dramatic story. A story of just matte paintings doesn't tend to be very interesting, but a story without them feels somehow small and cheap. And so having high production values is something that really makes a difference. But again, just like we were talking about with the DOP course, it doesn't have to cost a lot of money. And I think it's one of the most enjoyable things that you can do. Great for showreel, great to be able to develop something up. Back in the day, like I'm talking like 5 years ago, we had some matte painting courses that didn't take things to final. They were more like concept art to sort of three-quarter matte painting stuff. And people really were disappointed that we didn't take it right the way to the end. It was the nature of those courses back then in terms of, you know, sort of structuring stuff. We were trying to keep it open and loose that people could do whatever they wanted and go in every direction they wanted to. So it wouldn't make sense to narrow it down to a single thing. But we really sensed from that that sense of accomplishment comes from the completion of a great shot and being able to use it on your reel and do stuff. So this is a course. And as I said, his background is a ton of high-end projects, from Bourne Ultimatum, Quantum of Solace, so, you know, 007 to Thor. So it's really a good chance to get a person with that kind of experience, that kind of trained eye, to look over your work and give you the tips. Because identifying what is wrong is sometimes almost as hard as getting it right.
Yeah, for certain. And I mean, again, one of the things about this curriculum is actually a response to exactly what Mike said. It's like we're building an entire curriculum. And obviously, if you're going to take a look at our curriculum, the next sensible step to go beyond this would be doing the things that take the matte painting to the next level in compositing, things like environment techniques and particles and other things, larger scale techniques, to actually end up with a finished shot, not just do the matte painting in preparation for that, but actually do that skill. So it's an early leak into what we're planning moving forward,
I guess you could say. I didn't think we were going there, but okay, good. No, that's good.
Well, but that's exactly what we're trying to do, is to build that process to do exactly what you guys asked over time. And I'm really happy with the way that the troika of three DMP courses turned out that Ludo did. This is a sensible next step. And in the future moving forward, we're going to keep building from there, as we always have done. I don't think that's divulging too much, but nah, that's our aim. That's our aim.
Absolutely. So obviously, it's us. So there's going to be a Nuke course, and I think I'm right in saying that we've held back our Nuke 230 for the last of our new courses this term. Though I'm going to check that as John speaks.
You are correct, my friend.
But yeah, I think we've covered nearly all of the new courses apart from like background fundamentals and the other stuff that's going on. But yeah, do you want to talk to us about Nuke 230, John?
Yeah, and first, a big apology, an apology, I would say, to Hugo Laville for butchering his name when we were in China. I'll check that up to the jet lag, because I'm actually pretty decent with French. I can speak it on a certain level, but I basically call him Hugo the City. I totally butchered the pronunciation of his last name. So first off, apologies to that. But I love the idea behind this course, because I've frankly been a bit surprised, I would say, at the popularity of some of our Python-based courses in Nuke Mike over the years. I didn't necessarily think that they would be as incredibly popular as they were. But I think what people recognize, and it's something that I've actually thought over the years, is that the ability to do things with scripting in Python and create custom tools and procedures within Nuke are not necessarily power user features, but I call them lazy user features. They make your life easier.
Oh, yeah.
They allow you to do the same thing, repetitive task, multiple times in an easy way, and or create tools that are very specific to a task at hand. You know, you've seen stuff on Effects Guide where I think for Alice in Wonderland at Sony, they created a very cool custom rig that helped deal with the scaling of the queen's head and positioned her body. So that's just one example, the type of thing you can do, and obviously a complex example. But it runs the gamut from day-to-day tasks that make your life easier. And this very much builds on some of the courses that we've done in the past from people like Victor, who did a really cool Python-based course for us in the past. And this is about PySide, which is kind of a front-end UI to some of your scripts, basically allowing you to customize things, do custom tasks, create great things for the artists in your facility to hide some of the complexity that you don't need. You could have a box that enters a specific value. You have, you know, let's say you wanted to do a check for green or blue. You could require someone to do something very specific, or you could write a custom UI for that. So you make sure, number one, that the information gets entered correctly, and two, that it's easy to do for your users. So that's a really basic example. But what he's going to do is kind of start with some of the basics and drop on there to where you can create a front-end UI for the applications in which you build in Nuke. And I think it's really going to be a great course. It actually builds upon some of the stuff we've done in the past. And if you're interested at all in building custom tools or custom procedures in Nuke to use, you really should check out this course. And I know a lot of you have taken this course, because we know how many people have taken the Python courses in the past. I think it's a great addition. Hugo's a Nuke certified trainer through our site as well, and comes with strong production background as well, actually building tools like he's going to show you guys in his day job in Montreal.
Yeah, I've got to say, one of the things that I'm touching on in background in the first class is the idea of bothering to do stuff that will make your life easier in the long run. And scripting is probably one of the single easiest examples to give. It's so easy. And look, it doesn't have to even be Nuke, as I'll be talking about another, you know, apps like Photoshop or whatever, but like any repetitive task, any task that you can sort of plus multiply effectively your time by multiplying out the benefits of scripting is so much the difference between having a stress-free, you know, get the work done kind of life and just sitting there hitting your head against a brick wall, feeling like you can never get anything done and you can never get ahead. It's not just, you know, what you can do. It's the freeing you up to do other things because you're not doing the stuff that you could have more easily tackled. But it does require a little bit of effort. You know, you don't just get it for free. It's not like here's a trick, press this button and it's done. You have to learn and know how to do it. But then, you know, you're off to the races and it accelerates. And it's like one of those investments in time that reaps a hundredfold benefit over the next couple of years, as opposed to, you know, this button press, which might be cool, but you'd hardly ever use because it's, you know, an obscure corner of whatever piece of Nuke code that you're looking at.
Well, and I just want to point out as well, in addition to those two new compositing-centric courses, we have a lot of other great repeats going on in the Vault as well. We've got a tremendous lineup overall in the Vault. I mean, literally, as we said earlier, like close over 100 courses are available in the Vault, so be sure to check those out. Something for everyone. They're fantastic courses in their own right. They're not like the bastard stepchild of FX PhD in any way. They're really great courses, and there's a lot of fantastic material in them for you. So if you haven't been a member, check those out. And you know what? You can preview the first two classes in every single course by going to the preview classes page under the members tab.
Okay, and in addition to everything else, as I said, I think earlier, I'm doing Background Fundamentals, which is kind of your free weekly magazine kind of show where we cover tech and stuff, sort of, you know, on the maybe the edge of what you do in a course, but stuff that hopefully will help you down the pipe. And on top of all of that, we have the weekly This Week in FX PhD, which you're listening to now, stuff that's going on in the forums, challenges, just a ton of stuff going on. And we're always keen to do more. So, hey, we enjoy the conversation. Email us, post in the forums, probably the best place. And as I said earlier, if you've got any real serious technical difficulties, totally use the help button at the top right of the FX PhD homepage. Again, we want to be just so incredibly grateful to all the professors that have made time to be with us this term. It is absolutely the case that they're all from industry, working hard, really experienced, and fitting us in between projects and doing stuff because they want to. And we just love having them. So it's a tremendous sort of basically team that you're in. Take full advantage of it and, you know, look forward to hanging out with you guys in the rest of the term.
And thank you so much, Mike, for speaking so much. I know I was joking to be in the term or beginning of the podcast, but I really do appreciate it because my voice is going as we speak. So I appreciate you taking a bit more of the load in this podcast than normal.
And for our regular FX PhD members, you'll know this, but the FX PhD O Week video, which also gets put on the FX Guide TV at the end of the next step, we want you to share that. The more you share that, the happier we are. So obviously we have, you know, a closed shop when it comes to the classes for people that aren't members. But if you want to share the O-Week video, we'd really appreciate it because we have gained a lot over the years from the support and, quite frankly, the unfettered, unprompted pimping that you guys have done for us in recommending us to friends and family. And if you do recommend us to friends, don't forget to get a reference code when they join up so that we can give you a little thank you for helping to spread the word.
Hey, thanks guys so much for listening. We're really excited about the new term and we hope to see you in the forums. Until next week, thanks so much for listening.
See ya.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.